Good afternoon, everyone. Well, this is interesting. I went to my PowerPoint presentation and I saw a lizard. And I thought, I'm not speaking about lizards today. So I better move it over to the other one. I did get the password backed up so that I've got everything covered. I have an opportunity this week to speak to the students out at ABC. I was talking to them, Mr. Antion had given me the opportunity to speak to them about a topic that I had covered when I was a student out at Ambassador College on the topic of job search. And I had actually given the presentation for Dr. Kirkpatrick's class when I was out at Ambassador College. John Susan and I had met when we were out there. My wife, Chris, is here with me. And John and Susan offered, well, would you like to come up and visit us this weekend? And it was a wonderful opportunity to get reconnected with the Millers. We see them on and off, but not enough, and glad to be able to get together with you. So I'd like to tell you this, a story today. It's a story about a man. The name of the man is Oscar. Oscar was not really the kind of person that you and I would typically want to be associated with, really, almost in any way, shape, or form. It's certainly not somebody you'd want to be calling a friend. Oscar was a drinker. Oscar was a gambler. He was a womanizer. He took bribes. Oscar gave bribes. He was a successful businessman for part of his life, but he wasn't really a successful businessman in the way we would think of it. He was successful for a couple of reasons. He had hired people to work under him who ran the business for him. He was basically the front man. He was the individual that paid bribes to get things done. He was the individual who worked his network to get things done. But at the same time, he also hired slave labor to work at his factory at below market wages to generate the maximum profit for his business. He was a profiteer. So I have a question. Does Oscar sound like the kind of person we would want to be associated with? The answer, by almost all counts, is no. He was a scoundrel. He was a thief. He was a liar. He was a schemer. He was a crook. How could such a person ever have a positive impact on the lives of others when he so consistently used and abused those he came in contact with in his life? Could there be anything redeeming about this man named Oscar? No, there wasn't anything redeeming about Oscar. Or was there? Could a man like Oscar change? Or was his life so far gone down that wrong path that he could never be redeemed? Yet Oscar did change, and he did have an impact on the lives of others. Eventually, he saved the life of another person. And then he saved the life of two people. And then five. And then 10. And then 20. And then 100. And eventually, he saved the lives of more than 1,000 people. My purpose is to show you by the example of Oscar that redemption is possible for all. Oscar was a war profiteer during World War II. He opened up a factory in Krakow, Poland during World War II. My son Brandon and I went on a backpacking trip through Europe, and we had an opportunity to visit Oscar Schindler's factory. And this is a picture that I took when we were there at the factory. It was a moving experience for us because what they had done with the factory is they basically did two things. They turned part of it into a museum, but part of it they left alone. Part of it was as it was in World War II. And we had the opportunity to read the story and find out more about this man named Oscar Schindler. And it was interesting because there was something very unique and inspiring about this very flawed person. Because when you looked at Oscar Schindler's background, it was a very, very shady background. But yet as the world was collapsing around him into chaos, he stood apart as one man destined to make the difference in the lives of several, then scores, then hundreds, and eventually impacting thousands of people. Oskar Schindler was there in Krakow, Poland, during World War II, and he saw the Nazi liquidation of the Jews in 1942 out of the Krakow ghetto. Many of the things that we saw as we were traveling around Europe, we saw the remnants, we saw the aftermath of World War II. We actually got to the point where we had seen so much of man's inhumanity to man that we had kind of had our fill. And yet we went to this place in Krakow, Poland, the most it would not be the place you would have thought that here redemption took place. And yet, as we went through the factory and we learned more about the man, we saw that Oskar Schindler did change. And he didn't change just all of a sudden one day, go the other way, and that's how it went for the rest of his life. It was a very gradual change. It took place over time. But he realized that he had an opportunity and that he could protect people, that he could save people. As they closed the Krakow ghetto, he realized that his workers, because he was creating munitions, he was a munitions manufacturer, his workers were deemed to be essential to the war effort. And so anyone that was working for Oskar Schindler was protected. And he continued to add to the list of people who worked for him. And he actually did have a list that he built and grew. This is actually, you might recognize that as the desk where he sat at. That was his actual desk. And his office was retained very much the way it looked during World War II. And that was the place where Oskar Schindler put together his list. And he had a list, and it was a typed-out list of the names of people that he kept adding to and adding to. And it started with one, but it added to and added to. And by the end of the war, he had saved more than 1,100 people. Now, just to put this into perspective, at the beginning of the war in Poland, there were about 1 million Jews in Poland. At the end of the war in Poland, there were about 4,000 Jews. 1,100 Jews were saved by Oskar Schindler. And even to the end, when the guards of the camp where his workers were located were ordered to kill all of the Jews in the camp before abandoning the camp, Oskar Schindler went up against them, direct, eye to eye, and convinced them to walk away from the camp and to return to their families as men and not murderers. I'd like to play for you a scene from the movie Schindler's List. I'm not recommending this movie to you. It is a movie that is filled with violence that was unfortunately real violence that took place. It's a very graphic movie. The clip I'm going to play for you is near the end of the movie. It's the scene in the end of the movie where the guards have now abandoned the camp and Oskar Schindler is preparing to leave the camp. And as Oskar prepared to leave the camp, he met with the workers of the camp. I'm going to play a video clip for you from that.
We've written a letter trying to explain things in case you were captured. Every worker has signed it.
One life saves the world entire. I could have gotten more.
Asuka, there are 1,100 people who are alive because of you. Look at them.
If I'd made more money. I threw away so much money. You have no idea. If I just...
There will be generations because of what you did.
I didn't do enough.
You did so much.
Oskar Schindler was able to change. He made a change in his life. It's interesting that the skills that he had and that he used as a swindler, and as a bribester, were actually the same skills that he ended up using to save all those people. The ring that they gave him in that movie was inscribed, "Whoever saves one life saves the world entire." Oskar Schindler, after the war, never really amounted to much. Even though he was a successful businessman, quote unquote, during the war, he used all of his money. All of the money that he had earned, he gave that money back in bribes to save people. He actually used those same skills to save people. And after the war, he never really amounted to much. And yet, the nation of Israel had a special place for Oskar Schindler, and that they had later counted him as one of the most remarkable people of that generation, because he stood up as one man to make a difference. And to this day, there are people that call themselves Schindler Juden, or Schindler's Jews, that are the descendants of Schindler's Jews. And there are over 7,000 people worldwide. So Oskar Schindler made a difference. Whoever saves one life saves the world entire. And it was written in Hebrew on the inside inscription of that ring. And we look at somebody like this and we think, okay, that was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. That was one person in a special time, place, and circumstance who had an opportunity to make an impact and made an impact. But who am I? What could I possibly do in my life? And some people may even think, I've done so many things wrong in my life. How could I possibly do any good in my life? Yet Oskar Schindler, who had done so much wrong, ended up doing so much right. Some may even think, how could God even work with me, a sinner? Let's turn to the book of 1 Corinthians, chapter 1, verse 27. Turn with me to the book of 1 Corinthians, chapter 1, verse 27. Or you can read it up on the screen if you can. And we read in verse 27, "But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty." Who am I that I would be counted to be included in even the smallest matter? Yet God says very specifically that he's chosen the foolish rather than the wise, and the weak rather than the mighty. I have 2 points. Today, my first point is simple. Be a redeemer. Point number one is be a redeemer. In our lives, we have the opportunity to make a difference in the lives of others. It doesn't have to be in a big way. It can be in a small way. But again, a lot of us think, who am I? What could I possibly do at a personal human level? And the answer is very simple. Do good to all. Turn with me to the book of Galatians, chapter 6, verses 9 and 10. The book of Galatians, chapter 6, verses 9 and 10. "And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially those who are of the household of faith. And I think about this, and I think about this verse, and I think about how deeply touched and impacted Brandon and I were in visiting that factory. And it touched me, and it made me realize how important the small things are. Because Oskar Schindler didn't start out to save 1,100 people. He simply was starting out selfishly to save his workers, to save his profit. But it changed over time. He started with a small thing that became a very big thing. And I would say that many of us have done small things and not even been aware of the impact that we've had on others. It was interesting, during that same trip, Brent and I were, I literally had everything I was carrying with me in a small backpack. And it wasn't one of these big backpacks that you take hiking with you. It was actually this small laptop backpack. So we had everything on our backs. We were traveling by train around different parts of Europe. And we had stopped in a small town called Rothenburger Obertauber in Germany, beautiful medieval town. And we were having dinner there, and most of the people there spoke German, but we were in a restaurant where there were kind of communal tables, and another couple was there, and they heard that we were speaking English to each other, and they asked if they could talk to us, and we said, sure. We found out a little bit more about them, and we had dinner with them. We shared, broke bread together. We talked about our travels, and it was interesting because they were traveling basically the opposite way we were going. And they talked about some of the places we would be visiting. And we talked about the fact that we had just come from Stuttgart, Germany. And in Stuttgart, we visited the Mercedes-Benz factory. And actually, what we visited that was the most interesting was the Mercedes-Benz Museum in Stuttgart. Now, if you ever have an opportunity to travel internationally and get to Stuttgart, I had been to Stuttgart before, but I had never actually visited this until I did with my son. But I was so impressed with this museum and so enthusiastic about it. I told this couple about this museum, and they weren't planning on going there, but I said, oh, you really need to make time because it's a world-class car museum. If you like cars, and he mentioned how his wife really liked old automobiles, and I said, actually, two of the oldest automobiles in the world are in this location. So anyway, it was one of those passing in the night situations that we have quite often in life. And we went on with our trip. They went on with their trip. I had forgotten about that couple. But I had given, before we left, I gave them all of my brochures from the Mercedes-Benz factory because I didn't want the extra weight to carry on the rest of my trip. So I gave them my brochures, and I also drew out a map for them on how to get to the plant. And so anyway, about a year went by, and I got a letter in the mail. And it was from this gentleman. I had given him my card when we were traveling. And he wrote me this nice long letter. And it was a beautiful letter. He said how much he really appreciated meeting us, having the opportunity to talk with us. And he just wanted to thank me for the recommendation to go to the Mercedes-Benz car museum, that it was the highlight of their trip. And that they talked about, he and his wife talked about it often, and how wonderful that part of their trip was. And he just was writing to thank me. And then he said in his closing paragraph, my wife died. Sorry. He said, my wife died recently. And I was just thinking about it, and I just wanted to say thank you because it made a difference in our lives at an important time. That was the last trip. That was the last trip we were able to take together. And I thought, wow. I was blown away. It was such a small thing. We shared an hour over dinner, and it was such a small thing. I had forgotten about our conversation, and yet it meant so much to him. And it made me realize, how many times does that happen where somebody has an impact on us and we don't? Because what's interesting is he didn't write the letter after the trip. He wrote the letter after his wife died. So he thought about it then. And that's when he wrote the letter. And then he was thinking about and expressing his gratitude for people that had had a positive impact on in the last months of his wife's life. And I thought about two things. I thought about how many times have people touched me, and I need to show that gratitude and that level of thanks? And how many times have I unknowingly touched other people? And it raised my level of sensitivity about my interactions, about that opportunity to do good to all people in a small way, to be a redeemer, to help someone. To give them a small helping hand can mean a big deal. Recently, my wife and I were in we were in Peru. It was about a month and a half ago. I don't speak Spanish, and we were walking in Valparaiso, Peru. Valparaiso is kind of a, I'd say it's a little bit of a rough town. It's a port town. And we were walking on this one street. It was very, very sharp and angled in a cobblestone street. And my wife and I had just come out of a building. We were walking, and about 30 feet away from us, we heard a woman scream. And Valparaiso is not a very safe city. In fact, we were very careful about not bringing anything with us in our pockets, afraid of pickpockets and such. But, of course, you hear somebody scream, and you turn around. And we saw that there was a woman that had fallen. And this woman when we got up to her, she was about 70 years old. She had fallen backward onto the pavement. And I was one of the closest. There was another gentleman over here. We both ran to her, and that's just my instinct to do that and to see what I could do to help. And as I got closer to her, I could see that the blood was spurting out of the back of her head. She had cut open the back of her head, and it was actually flowing out of the back of her head. And I've taken a Red Cross first aid course. I'm not medically trained beyond that, but I had taken that, and I knew immediately I needed to get pressure on that wound and get the blood flow to stop. Because the blood had, just in that 15, 30 seconds that it took me to get to her, the blood was already pooling there in between the cobblestones. She was losing blood fairly rapidly. And I looked around. I yelled for someone if they had a first aid kit to bring it. I did, and by the way, I know those of you that are medically trained will tell me this was the wrong thing to do, and you can always look back and think this was the wrong thing to do, but I do remember in my first aid class, they said you need to get pressure on the wound as soon as possible. If you have a compress, use a compress. If you don't, use your bare hand. Make sure your bare hand does not have any open wounds, and I did. And I know some people would say, you know, blood contact is not a good thing. She's a 70-year-old woman in Lima, or I'm sorry, in Chile. I think I said Peru. I meant Chile, Valparaiso, Chile. I did. I had to pull her head because she was laying on her back. She was still conscious, but I could see the blood coming out of the back of her head. But because of the hair, it was difficult to find. And I found it. It was actually a fairly long gash. I could barely cover it with my palm, and I applied pressure to it, and then used my other hand to press back against her head. And all the time I'm speaking to her, but I'm speaking English. She doesn't understand a word I'm saying. She's frightened. She knows she's injured. I'm calling out for other people by now there's a crowd gathering. And I'm calling out for other people to call an ambulance. I'm looking for an interpreter. And finally this one woman, she was actually another tourist from Chile, but not from the local area, but she spoke Spanish and some English. And she came up and started interpreting, and I was trying to emphasize to the woman that it was important to relax, lay still. I had other people then check her extremities to see if she had any nerve damage. It didn't appear so, and I didn't want to move her head very much because, again, you need to immobilize. But I wanted her to stay still, not try to struggle against me. I was trying to explain why I was pressing so hard against the top of her head because I had to press to get the pressure to get the blood flow to stop. And then finally somebody brought a compress, and I was able to put a compress to her head. And I eventually got the blood flow to stop. The ambulance was coming, and another gentleman stepped in with a larger compress and took my place. The people that had gathered around mostly spoke Spanish, but they showed me to a place where I could wash my hands. I was covered with blood by this point. But she was okay, and the blood flow stopped, and she was still conscious. And I reacted. I would just happen to be there, and I reacted. I did what I could to help. And we walked, after that, we went to a nearby restaurant. We were We went for lunch. I was still shaken up a bit by this. And the woman who had done the interpreting walked into the restaurant. And she came to me and she said, "Are you a doctor?" And now I'm feeling kind of embarrassed because I kind of took command of the situation and I'm not a doctor. But I was telling everybody what to do because nobody else seemed to be there doing that. And she said, "Are you a doctor?" And I said, "No." I said, "I'm trained in first aid." I said, "But I'm not a doctor." And she said, "You saved that woman's life." And I said, "Okay, well, I don't think so. Thank you." And I thought about it, and I thought, and in honesty, I don't know. If I know I was there to help, but it emphasized to me the importance of being used as an instrument in God's hands. I believe God gave me that opportunity to be there, to help this woman, and to be used as an instrument, and to do good to all. The other part, I when you take a first aid class, you don't really know, will I ever really need this, right? Will I ever actually use it? Anybody who has kids, we know that we find all sorts of small things, right, that we will want to need and use first aid for. But I never anticipated there would be something like that where it might come into play. So we have opportunities to do good to all people. We have those opportunities to do good things toward other people. And I think about a time as well, a friend of mine. It's not just the physical, it's the spiritual. How many times have we had friends ask us questions that they couldn't answer spiritually? I had a good friend who lost his brother. We went to high school together. He and I were high school best friends. And his younger brother died right after we graduated from high school. And he was struggling with the aspect of understanding and comprehending what happened to his brother. And he asked me what I believed. And I had an opportunity to tell him what I believed about life after death. And I think sometimes we can grow weary in the fact that we know things that we collectively within this room sometimes take for granted. But it is such a marvelous thing to hear for somebody else who's never heard the opportunity of the resurrection, to hear about the first resurrection and the second resurrection. And my wife, Chrissy, recently was talking with the mother of a friend, and she also was talking about the fact that her sister and her friend had died, and she was struggling with trying to understand what had happened to them after death. And Chrissy explained it to her, and her mind was open to hearing, and Chrissy then got a copy of the booklet to give to the person about life after death. And so many times do we plant those small seeds. And how many of us are here because somebody planted a small seed with us? And sometimes we don't know where that seed may fall in stony ground or where it may fall in fertile soil. But we have the opportunity in our life, in small ways, sometimes in big ways, but in a lot of small ways, to be a redeemer. So point number one is to be a redeemer. My point number two is to be redeemed. How? As we come through Passover in the days of unleavened bread, it's by the redeeming sacrifice of Jesus Christ. Let's turn to the book of Titus, chapter 2, verses 11 to 14. The book of Titus, chapter 2, verses 11 to 14. We read, "For the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us that, denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in the present age, looking for the blessed hope and glorious appearing of our great God and Savior Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from every lawless deed and purify for himself his own special people, zealous for good works." That word redeem is the Greek word lytro, which means basically to release or set free by paying the full ransom. And it's interesting, in a physical way, that's what Oscar Schindler did. He paid that full ransom to save the lives of other people. And yet spiritually, this is what Jesus Christ has done for each one of us. So redeem basically means to release someone held captive by paying a ransom. Our Savior, Jesus Christ, has paid that ransom for us. He is our Redeemer. When we fall down, our Redeemer lifts us up. Where we fail, our Redeemer has succeeded. When we sin, our Redeemer has paid the penalty for that sin. And when we fall short, our Redeemer will strengthen us. How? By daily asking for God's strength where we lack, in our prayer, our Bible study, our meditation, and asking not our will, but your will be done. Denny Luker was our pastor in the Seattle area, and we've all gone through a lot of hurt and a lot of pain in Seattle with the recent death of Mr. Luker. But yet, I think of Mr. Luker, and I think of what a wonderful example he is and was to each one of us, and how the memory of Mr. Luker will live on for each one of us. He set such a wonderful example by living God's way of life, that he was a wonderful example for each one of us, and that he stepped into the gap, and he was the one who is humble, kind, loving toward every one of us. He didn't judge us. He gave us that opportunity to grow and to know that each one of us individually needed to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, that God paid the penalty by the sacrifice of his son, Jesus Christ, for each one of us, not only for all, but for each one of us individually. And so many times in our life, we can think, God gave his son for that sacrifice, but it was for everybody else, it wasn't for me. But that sacrifice was for me and for you and for each one of us individually as well. And so that aspect of being redeemed is accepting that sacrifice, is accepting that covering blood sacrifice of Jesus Christ. So we do have to look to that saving mercy of Jesus Christ and his sacrifice. So Oscar Schindler, a man of the world, saved the physical lives of over a thousand Jews in World War II. He made a mark on generations to come. Yet Jesus Christ has saved the spiritual lives of all people by his personal sacrifice. His sacrifice will be felt by all generations. Do good to all, yet look to the saving mercy of God in Jesus Christ. Be a redeemer. Be redeemed. Whoever saves one life saves the world entire. Jesus gave up his life to save the entire world.